Visiting with us today is Dr. George Boyd, who trained as an airman in Tuskegee and went on to serve in the U.S. Air Force and Civil Air Patrol. Dr. Boyd holds two postgraduate degrees and has scores of journal articles to his name. He was in the Air Force from 1944 to 1971, retiring as a major, served in various leadership roles in the CAP, holds the rank of colonel there. Colonel Boyd, thanks so much for coming by today.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Well, that's quite a statement from somebody with your background, so thank you. So, talk about your experience in Tuskegee, how that kind of started your career as a military aviator.
Well, actually, the career started before I got into the service. I was a Civil Air Patrol cadet, and I found out about a thing called the Enlisted Reserve Corps, which guaranteed if you enlisted with your parents' consent, that you would be inducted into the Army Air Corps, and that's what I did. So when I was called to active duty on the 20th of July, 1944, which was an anniversary here the other day, I went to work in the service. And what that meant was that my father was going to work in Richfield, New Jersey, and he said, well, I can stop you off at the bus stop. So he took me to the bus stop, and he went to work, and I went to war.
Wow. So did you go straight to Tuskegee at that point?
Well, in a circuitous route. We were on the way, but we ended up on a troop train, and troop trains were treated almost like cattle cars.
Yeah.
They went wherever the traffic could take them, and they ducked them into different places depending on where you were going. And so we ended up out in Utah on the railroads, and finally we got to Tuskegee. And we got off at a place called Chehaw, Alabama. Now, every Tuskegee airman that's gone through that program knows where Chehaw is, because you got off the train and got onto six bys, which were the trucks, and they took you out to the airbase. So that's how it got started.
How much did you know about the program and about Tuskegee when you became a part of it?
I was kind of lucky. A friend of mine named Sam Rhodes from Leonia, New Jersey, he had come home. He had injured his back, and they had separated him from the service. And he asked me to think about going in, and I told him what I had done. He says, well, why don't you try to fly? I said, well, okay. I hadn't really had that much interest in flying, but I thought that was a good thing to do. So that's what I did. And he looked good in his uniform. He had his wings on. I had the wing on the cap and all the things that go with that.
It's the uniform.
Well, it helped.
Yeah.
I'm not going to deny that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I think the rest of us felt that way,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So was the reputation that the black American aviators have developed that we know about now, the reputation for so carefully and effectively protecting those bombers, was that known at that point in time?
No. When I went in, it was known in the tactical organizations that were fighting the war, but we didn't know about that. We really didn't. And we didn't know about the Tuskegee Airmen as fame, other than the fact the black pilots were known as the fearless flyboys. They weren't even known as Tuskegee Airmen then.
Sure.
And there's just the guys that were flying, and people thought that was really great. And everybody did. Even the guys that were in the program, we thought it was a great opportunity. We knew that. But that's it. The rest of it was we were fighting a war. We didn't know what was going on. We knew we could get killed, and the other fears that come with being in a war. So we didn't have the same concept that people have today about it.
Sure. Right. Well, in so many things, right?
Mm-hmm.
History, and then the stories around the actual history tend to sort of create an image that isn't happening at the moment. It's it's being earned, so to speak. So, end of hostilities in middle of 1945 was not long after your time in Tuskegee ended. What happened then with your career as a military aviator?
Well, I decided I wanted to stay in, and I had been, like I say, eliminated from that program. I didn't finish the program, but I decided I wanted to stay in the military because I liked military service. I really did. And so I stayed in. I became the last base sergeant major at Tuskegee, and I only had three stripes. And of course, there was no vacancies because they were closing the base. So, but I got the experience of being an administrator, and I got a letter from Donald McPherson and Captain Clark, and they were the last executives, administrative executives of the base before it closed. So
there were several years there between the end of World War II and the beginning of the real activity in the Korean conflict. And your first time in combat then was in the Korean War, right?
My first time in actual combat per se, to know it was combat, was in the Vietnam War. Hmm. During the Korean War, I was flying with the F-94s, F-89s. We were flying Air Defense Command fighter planes. I was an RO. That's the person that flies in the back seat and operates radar. And so mainly what we did was chase the Russian bombers that were doing electronic surveillance of our communications off just outside the 12-mile limit. And they'd come in, and every once in a while they'd come inside, and we'd chase them off. And they'd scramble us from our ground control radar, and we'd take off and fly out and chase them. And then we'd also intercept airliners that were outside of the entrance zones into our air defense zones. So that's what we did at Thule, Greenland, protecting the fuel tanks up there for the B-36s and protecting our shore, or the lower 48 states in that regard, and also Newfoundland, Canada, and places like that, because they were part of the North American air defense system.
Right. So you spent a lot of time, developed a great deal of specialty competence in airborne radar specifically, right?
Yeah, with the fighters, yes. Okay. That was my expertise at that time. And then I became a management engineer, which was much more exciting in a way. It was administrative, but it had to do with setting standards and applying standards to determine the requirements for manpower to fight a war or not fight a war or to do specific tasks. And I had an opportunity with the Military Airlift Command to do all of the air terminal squadrons around the world. And I did it all in a couple of months. We went all over the world. And we retrograded in Europe because we were building up in Vietnam. So that we applied the standards, and it worked. It worked perfectly. So
that was all through the 1960s, 1970s, is that right?
No, that was earlier than that. That was... it was in the 60s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because in the 70s, all of those things were in place by then.
I see. So your career with the Air Force went through 1971, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So when you left the Air Force, how did you decide what to do next? You had developed pretty deep expertise in a particular area. You had become management, so to speak, in that period of time. Is that when you went back to school, or had you already pursued the graduate degrees by
that
point?
Well, I was lucky. Colonel Newsom, who was a vice commander of the missile wing at McConnell, he made a suggestion that I go to the advanced training program, a distant learning program that was initiated by the University of Oklahoma. And he said that you could get your master's degree in about a year if you worked it right. And I said, I was incredulous. So I did it. I did it in a year. Mm. So I had my education. And believe it or not, having that education was tantamount to me getting several jobs. I was director of the clinic at Wesley Hospital in Wichita due to that opportunity, because I had an education. And then I worked at the Boeing Military Airplane Company because I had that education. And then I was chosen to be the director of aviation for the state of Kansas in the Department of Transportation because I had that education. And what John Phelps told me was that he had hired me because of all the candidates, I was the only one with a master's degree.
There's a testimony for
and,
you.
And I had my pilot's license. Yeah.
So do you apply or package that message when you're speaking to young people?
Yes, and I've talked to over 70,000 of them.
70,000.
Yeah, and I talked to 10,000 of them yesterday. So same thing right here. So it's been an awful opportunity. Awesome opportunity. And I take advantage of it because it's knowing what you need to know. We even talked in 2009, the Tuskegee Airmen, four of us went over to Iraq, Kuwait, and Qatar and talked to 7,000 of our troops overseas. And we told them the same thing. If you want to stay in, develop your career, you got to be on top of the technology. You got to have your education. If you want to get outside and you're going to work in civilian life and to stay on top of your career, you got to have that education to get ahead.
Yeah.
So it's win-win. And I told him, I said, you know, I did it. And I said, I didn't miss any parties either. When I told them that, they had a good time laughing about
so,
that.
So what does that mean?
That means That means you have to do the best you can. Because I tell little kids, they say, the teachers want to know what last word should I tell them. Well, I say, your mission now, and I tell the kids, your mission now is to learn your lessons, do what your teacher says, and be the best you can. That's what your mission is now. And that's all you're supposed to do. Get those lessons and do the best you can. Hmm. And it'll pay off later on.
We'll continue the conversation with Colonel George Boyd at Tuskegee Airmen after this short break, and you're reviewing Flight Plan on EAA Radio.